Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a review of the chemistry of some common materials that I suppose I've grown up with and I've had a little bit of a look at, and they cover things like something called Kapton, which is a sort of insulated material, an insulated material of preference for aircraft and electronics. You have Kapton tape, it's sort of a very good insulation tape, fairly fireproof tape. There's Teflon, which is of an interest, because it's of non-stick surface. Something called ABS, which is the stuff of Lego blocks and 3D printing. And there's also sort of this magic adhesive tape. It's just a suction tape. It's a sort of a fairly complex thing to understand. Now, let's go. I suppose because I've been in laboratories and you're building things, you're researching, you find the ideal polymer for this, the ideal widget for that. I can remember there's PEEK, various materials for high voltage with lasers and stuff like that. You often used to machine up little bits of Teflon for vacuum systems. You know, you'd build things that could, plastics which could withstand heat and not out gas and get all the various thermal stuff. And look, to be sure, a lot of the plastics have been about since the 60s. What has changed in the last, I suppose, 50 years is the ubiquity, the quality, the application of it to come across. So I'm just going to give an overview, then I might give another podcast, a molecular tour of a particular molecular system, just so I can record it myself. So what I'm doing is I have to do so much exercise and eat so much less just to knock off kilos. I was 15 kilos overweight and now I'm 5 kilos overweight. And gee, that last 5 kilos is really hard to do. And so I have to get into the discipline of just going for long walks. And I suppose part of the sort of cognitive stuff is that you say, oh, look, I'll cover this and I'll do these various things. Now, just to give you the linear link, I'm coming up with the this is a separate thing. I'm working on an Internet of Things roll-up school experiment, which has just got a battery and it records everything to the highest precision possible, to scientific grade precision. But for kids, but for under $100 or $50 US, you have this kit and it rolls out and all does it. Now, there's a sort of a little bit of a difference here between, people who aren't research scientists. So, essentially, as a research scientist, you have to build a laser and you have to research things and you have to build it from scratch, and if you don't have anything, you've got to machine it. If you don't know how to design it, you've got to look up how to design it. You've got to essentially manufacture high tech from nothing. Well, at least in Australia, you have to. There's no buy a company, trade. A lot of people say, look at technology nowadays as, oh, I'm up with technology, I've bought an Apple, or I've bought a Microsoft. You know, they equate technology savvy with actually just buying stuff. And I can say that, you know, my various friends in India and Russia and stuff like that, you know, you just got to go to the basics and go ahead. Now, I suppose one of the things that you pick up is you sort of become tuned to the immediate negative response. Now, this sounds strange. So I'm building this and, in any day, in any activity, I really hope this directional microphone is getting rid of that the traffic noise here. Okay, getting back to it. People are extremely negative, and they're negative before you've got an ability to say what you're actually doing or how it fits together, or they will listen to something and actually just immediately pick in the negative stuff. And really, it's sort of like people who are really listening to you and give you a good review will eventually add in a few negative points. So it's sort of like a sort of detailed review and hit the negative points. And at the end of the day, it's those negative points which make you better and stuff like that. So I've got a few examples of that already happened today in different fields where people are just instantly negative and you just can't put any energy into it. And so the thing here, the negative aspect is, why, you know, isn't it better if you're creating a device that measures the pH, all the temperatures and the mass of a device in situ and just ports everything to the mobile phone? Isn't it better the old way, where you had individual thermometers and individual processes? Kids learnt from whatever it is, and whether you agree with it or not, they'll say that and put across. And one of the things is that you've got to look at a thermometer, a glass thermometer, and think, well, how does it use, you know, what's the actual situation? I'm just going to run you through the glass thermometer. So in Australia, they're getting rid of mercury thermometers. There you go. So ideally, a glass thermometer is built from yesteryear, in which you could blow a small amount of glass and have a capillary, and the mercury's got a fairly good thermal expansion coefficient. The glass is, particularly quartz, has got a low thermal coefficient, and a mercury thermometer, you can control the amount of mercury calibrated up and get a fairly accurate analog reading. Now, of course, this is bizarre compared to thermocouple, which has got a much lower thermal mass, and you can set it and forget it, and with this Internet of Things, it just records the data every second to a hundredth of a degree, absolutely reliable and cross-calibrated and all that type of stuff. But you know, still nonetheless, having a thermometer there is okay. Now, in Australian schools, I think some senior final year work is allowed. It's allowed to have a mercury thermometer, but you're not allowed to have mercury on the premises unless you've got a mercury cleanup kit and all this type of stuff. And you know, I don't know. One of the, you hear this, and then you open the cupboard, and there's a big mercury manometer. So it used to be millimeters of mercury. Mercury used to be fairly ubiquitous, but it's since changed. I think during my PhD in the late 80s, they had people exploring mercury vapor lamp. And just to give you an idea, there's a small amount of mercury in the old fluorescent tubes, because it's got a good vapor pressure and can strike, and it's still like, and there's a mercury in contaminants, but in general we're getting away from it. Now, this PhD in ANU, or this research in ANU, it had a mercury gas, and so this mercury gas would be a 15th of a nothing, but nonetheless it triggers a certain safety standards, and they had explosive mercury detectors in the room and explosive bolts on the window, and a fence around the ground out of the window was going to blow out, and if it blew out, it meant that you couldn't get access to that part of the garden beneath it. So mercury is taken fairly seriously, and people are sort of disregarding, you've still got, you can buy mercury tilt tilt switches, sort of, and I look at it and I'm just, how does that happen? Now, also, mercury's not allowed in aircraft because mercury just dissolves aluminium and will destroy your aircraft. And so they're beginning to disappear around the place. Instead, they have a alcohol, coloured alcohol-filled tube. Now, this has the advantage that alcohol's got a huge thermal, volumetric thermal coefficient. So when it's taken fairly close to a temperature, it will increase in heat. Now, we're getting back to, into it as to, you know, why do you look at all these materials and why do you think of it? Well, to actually use the thermometer with a Bunsen burnt flame, you have to have eye protection. I can tell you exactly why, because I explained in detail that you can't put the little bulb in a Bunsen flame or it will heat up and explode, and because of that you had to have glasses, and I told them this and then immediately a boy did it, and you know, what can you do? You can't get upset. So if you're a junior teacher, they can do whatever they like, because they can just say, oh, the bad teacher and stuff like that. But fortunately, you had glasses there. So there is a sort of a danger of it exploding. And basically, in order to run lab, you know, one of the basic things is around 13, 14, boys and various people grow up and they lose coordination, and they just can't help knocking equipment over. So basically, fortunately, I've been a military drill instructor, and you had to sort of do sort of things like strip your rifle at night to fix it, you know, a stoppage, and then you have to reassemble it. And so in this case, there's a way of laying out your bench. As you light something, you put the matches down a neat pile so you can see what's going on. There's a way of lighting Bunsen burners, and also using a thermometer. It's in a case, and when it's not used, it's put up right against the corner of the wall so it can't roll off. And so once you see a few mistakes like this, you introduce this and you have basically, you can launch a rifle drill, whatever it is, and you can get students up safely and away. But we still have the issue, you know, people are still going to say, oh, the thermometer is best, it's $3, your thing costs, you know, $60, I'm just not going to do it. And I know our school can't afford a $600 version of it. The logic isn't there. But I actually don't think this is a necessarily bad thing. I just think it's like sort of a very large optimization engine. You've got different solutions. They're not necessarily logical. But there's sort of no... Like in science publication, you basically have to do it the best way possible and have everything traceable. Not so in education. So you have to really understand that people aren't too critical of the way things are done. So being ahead of the game, you sort of realise that it's no point just stopping, but designing the best thing possible given the equipment available, and just stopping. You have to go back and actually look at what's there, what are the faults, and can you improve it? So immediately I sort of began to look at, is there something else we can put in the tube? You know, is there a different material we could make it out of? That being that it could lower the cost and increase the safety. And the short answer is, yeah, this is quite possible. But looking down the list of linear coefficients, my eye struck upon Captain. And I suddenly remember, oh, I'll do something on that. And then that led to ABS, which has also got a linear coefficient, very common plastic, and then sort of you ask certain questions of it, and they're off to this other material. So that's how I got to look at it. And bear in mind that you've got to compare me to the teacher who's always used a glass thermometer, a tube, and that's it. Okay, well, in my case, that's not it. I've built up a electronic version of this, which I think is going to be much cheaper. And it's, I've slowly, through the days, actually solved one problem after the other, and so I've not been podcasting as much. But let's get back to it. So we have this, from experience, what's the problem with existing thermometers? Could we make it out of different materials? Or could we have a solid material with a huge expansion coefficient sitting inside that little bulb? The short answer is no. I think gasoline, and there's no reason we shouldn't use gasoline. Is the king of thermal coefficients. It's got 900 whatever they are units. Aluminium's got 69, copper's got 50. Alcohol's got 780 units of volumetric expansion. Glass has got 6, down to quartz 0. And so you're asking, what materials? Well, it really still has to be. If you're not using mercury, which I think has got 69, is it 69? It's something high. So you've got to use a large amount of mercury. Now, the issue is alcohol's got a lower... You get the thing, I'm sticking it in a flame and all this type of stuff. It can't get possibly out, and you've got all this problem-solving thing. Now, the thing is perhaps gasoline or... coloured alcohol is a thing to do. It's also wetting, how it actually wets the capillary, how it looks inside the capillary, and what exactly is going on there. Now, another thing here is that the thermometer, your glass thermometer, is a combination of optics. It's a small amount of liquid going up at the focal point of your your cylindrical lens, and so it appears magnified. So it's sort of like a few combinations, things, a few tricks in there, and. To actually see what's going on. Now, the fundamental thing is, obviously, there's got to be a plastic which can replace the glass. Now, this polycarbonate plastic, there's basically bulletproof glass plastic, sort of very rigorously strong plastics, you have to look at something which has a low thermal coefficient of expansion. Is you got all the properties, and sort of like plastic I sort of picked as Captain Plastic for your bulb. It is actually it's just sort of got a see-through, but you can bond, once you've got one thing, you can bond high visibility plastic on top of that, and so there are these very thin plastics, and the idea is that Captain is very high temperature holding. It would it's probably the way to go, and we could form it and basically make a indestructible school thermometer. Why you'd want to do it, I don't know. It's obviously not a market out there because these cost $3 each to buy, so they really cost someone in India 50 cents each to make. So they're worth nothing. However, if you want to make something indestructible, you go down, you want to look at this. Now, the major thing is that I, of course, am not thinking, oh, great, we'll do this. I'm just part of rigorous background thinking. So when I'm speaking to my negative person saying, oh, no, you don't want to do that. Yeah, no, give that up. No, no, let's go with it. No, not worth it. No. Stupid. Even before you've said anything, you sort of want to sort of think through what they're doing. And so this has led me on to think of these different plastics and the thermal coefficient of expansion of these different things. So the idea is that you could keep alcohol in the centre, or even gasoline in the centre, and start to make it of a plastic material which is high temperature, thin, and basically will resist explosion or anything like that. You can stick it in the flame and it won't catch a lie, and you can make it hard that you can't really break it. So there's polycarbonate, there's basically bulletproof plastic. So there's something that you could be said for it. Yeah, the range and how you can set. Now, the interesting thing is that given people, given the lack of technology that you want to use it, you can encourage kids to use their mobile phone as a magnifier to hold your basic thermometer. And certain basic things is to take it out of the experiment, and you could do things like get sort of far higher accuracy of only measuring a certain amount of seconds out, or measuring the length of time it takes to drop to beneath a degree. So that gives you could do all of those sorts of things, all really unnecessary if you were a thermocouple and stuff like that. We're looking at, so I want to talk about a few of these other materials, and then I'll afterwards give you on another podcast a molecular tour of one of them. So Captain, CAPTON tape. I still have a few rolls of this tape. I absolutely love it. So when I'm rolling up solenoids or doing things with high, heating things, I use this tape. Now, this tape I kept in a drawer. It was the only tape available. My son had his chair was falling apart, and he just used meters of it. This is the most precious tape, and so I'm really aware of using it in aircraft and use it. So it's a very common tape. So I obviously kept it and used it, but so I don't like losing it. And so it's a brownish tape, and it was developed for the space race in the 60s by DuPont. And you see it in spacecraft all the time, and with the moon landing, the Apollo missions had it everywhere. It was their preference for heat shields and everything. So you'd make a composite of this plastic and aluminium as a quick deployable heat shield. And when the lunar lander blasts off, and you see, and it's, there's a camera left behind to transmit what's going on, and blasts off again, you see this fragmenting stuff, and that's the Kapton tape. And I found it very interesting because it's got a low thermal coefficient, or it's at low temperature, And it's sort of a very interesting ubiquitous polymer to think about. It's a plastic, and there's that. So that will be my pick to go ahead. Now, another thing which has a low thermal coefficient of expansion. So if you are imagining, you know, sort of imagine building something like this, and then you could link it to 3D printing. You know. And so the plastic used for printing is something called ABS. I really can't quite remember it. It's a sort of a three-component scrambled, like super cross polymer. So it's got rather than a monomer or a dimer, you know, two things. It's actually got three components in it, and so it forms a strand in one direction and then links across in another, and it's, yeah, something which I eventually want to understand. So that's ABS. Now, ABS sticks to Kapton, so that's an important point for me in terms of like you're building this particular thing, this thermometer, you may as well build it into a Lego block, so at the end of the day you stick them all back into Lego. So I've got that general idea, and so there's ABS, and you can in 3D printing, it's important that your first, you know, when you're putting things down for the first time, it sticks, you know, it's got to stick to something. And then at the end of the day, I would imagine you'd heat it up. I'm not quite sure. So, you know, obviously 3D printing is something to get your mind around, and you know, try and think about. At a certain point, it's going to be cheaper for me. I just can't believe I can. Yeah, so if I want to make something, I eventually will want to 3D print these things. That'll just drive me crazy. That'll be the death of me if I get a 3D printer. However, what I think might happen is that they have this cape on tape, and so Kapton tape. And just to give you an idea, there are it's an insulating material for aircraft. You know, the aircraft has a fire, you don't lose the electrics right away. You lose them in a little while, but you don't lose it right away with this high temperature tape. It's very lightweight, and there's sort of adhesive tape, so you can often, with robots, lay down wires on it, right? And then for bespoke point-to-point wiring, you lay down wires on it, and you can do it. So like a poor man's set of wires for point-to-point wiring is that you get out 20 sort of wires, you place it on the tape, then seal it, then you've got a, you know, nice little cable. You know, it's just a nice material to work with. So however, your plastic sticks to it like dog's breakfast. So this is also a good thing. So you can actually stick it around the place with just a little, well, basically a hot melt glue gun, but with this material, ABS. Now, ABS is the material of Lego blocks. So it's got a very low thermal expansion coefficient. It's just a fantastic material. And you sort of want that because you want it you don't want it to shrinkle, you know, you come out of your hot melt gun and then shrivel up. You want it to just melt and become soft and stay thermally the same size. And with Lego blocks, you basically, yeah, put one in the fridge and it can actually stick on one on the outside. They don't dimensionally change. And it's such a fantastic material. It's sort of rather nice material to work with. So I often sort of prototype things out of Lego to put it together. Just think about using Lego all the time. So this ABS material. Now, the fact that this Kapton can go to high temperatures is that you can put a heater underneath it, and but basically peel off your work. So your work sticks on top, and then put a little heater, it comes off. So that's a thought. And one has to think, well, eventually this, like the plotting, 3D. It's a 3D printed, it's better to say it's a 3D plotted. It's not printing as we know it. I think printing is the 3D printer is the light-based thing. And there's a basic technology out there. And so this brings me on to the next thing of... I do know that this rule that you learnt in the lab is that nothing sticks to Teflon except a special 3M Teflon sticking glue. So why would you want to do that? Well, basically, if you want to machine anything in plastic and put it in a vacuum system, which doesn't outgas forever. So when you put something in a vacuum system, you put it in a jar and basically suck out all the air, and you got a millionth of an atmosphere. Just a tiny, tiny little drop of anything in there will be, and you're trying to get down to a billionth of an atmosphere, will just outgas forever in a day. And so what you have to do is that you have to get plastics and stuff like that and heat the bejesus out of it, which is usually means getting Teflon hook-up wire. Teflon, yeah. Well, you've got Teflon on the inside. On the outside, you have this Teflon hook-up wire, which you wrap around your system and run a fair amount of current through it, and it heats the entire thing up. And obviously, you can't have rubber O-rings, because the rubber O-rings will just melt. So you have, I think there's nitrile. You've got various O-rings and greases, which can take high temperature, so you've got to bake out your system to go. So you get to use to using Teflon, and in certain circumstances you want to stick two Teflon pieces together, and there's a special 3M glue. I found out the hard way there is nothing that sticks to Teflon, and so you've got this this thing, and I just love Teflon wire. Especially when you strip it, you've got this really cute... You can put this Teflon wire, encase it in epoxy. There's a special way that you do it, so it locks in there. Then you withdraw the wire from the inside, and you've got this really cute little tube going in through. So you can do these pretty amazing things with it. So Teflon is a fluorinated polymer, which has got very lowest, it's got high coefficient of expansion. It's not too good in that process, but it's got beautiful machinable. It doesn't outgas. It can take 400 degrees Celsius. No worries, no gassing, doesn't decompose. It's like it's God. And look, your Teflon plumber's tape, something I just absolutely adore. So if you where you get Teflon is the coating of your Teflon fry pans. There's nothing should stick to it. And the idea that that you can get health problems from it are just absurd. In my book, I suppose I could be wrong. There could be chemical reactions which recur on the surface. So, just God's gift of materials. Now, my issue here is that if you have transparent Teflon, you could shine lights underneath it and make sort of a. You wouldn't put, the Teflon obviously would scatter UV light, and maybe UV. Sensitive, but you should be able to shine light from underneath, and if you can shine light from underneath, you can do something and actually make a material which you shine light from underneath, it doesn't stick, so you can keep on curing it, and you can actually just lift it up, and there's it's sort of various models. So I eventually looked into that. Can you have clear Teflon Can they make Teflon clear nowadays? And the answer is yes. So in the 80s, 90s, 2000, they couldn't make clear Teflon, but somehow they are making Teflon films, which are, look, they're not, you'd notice if you, if it's on your windscreen, you wouldn't be able to see clearly through it, but it is, for all intents, it'll be a sort of like you could coat your exercise books, you know, with that clear, you could coat it with Teflon, you know, that would be something. And you could, I could well imagine, obviously it's not going to be as hard, but you can imagine a few series of things that you could do with that, and you could, I suppose, you could also, you know, I suppose, heat it up and all that palaver. It's really interesting. So I'm just going to come to the end of this pretty soon, because then I'll stop and give a molecular tour of Cape Horn. But something which also struck me is that, oh well, they've got these films, what else can they do nowadays with it? And so what you have is these people are marketing this material. It's no longer held for the military or special. They're just marketing it to anyone who will possibly buy any of it. So, you know, mind boggles what you could do with stuff. Now, they have this called suction tape. Now, I think this is a dielectric tape, but at any rate, it's a plastic tape which has a huge adhesive force. So as long as it hasn't had grease on it, it sticks, and you can actually use it basically as a reusable double-sided tape for glass. And, you know, the use of it is just, you know, mind-blowing. And they have it, this is for mobile phones. And, yeah, it's called suction tape. And how it works, I think it might be dielectric. It's obviously got to be some force or something there, as far as I can see. And, yeah, wouldn't this be great to use? So they use it for mobile phones or when you have to stick something up. And, dare I say, a lot of other suction technologies have fallen by the wayside compared to this. Now, you could possibly imagine it. It's hard to say. You've got your whiteboards and stuff like that, but so just putting a sign up on glass using bits of suction tape, you know, or sticky tape and suction tape. So you want to stick a sign up on some glass. You put some, so I can imagine products with it. So just in review, it's just part of the, sort of comes with the service. Like when you cut off and you're out there, you know, saying, what can you do? You know, like you go, oh, well, what I'll do is I'll build, and this is a summary, guys. This is a Internet of Things thermometer system, and I'll explain where I'm up to at a later podcast, probably in this sequence. You sort of analyse sort of two levels. The negative viewpoints of the laziness. People don't want to think, so they just think of enough negative things to close the door on you. So you sort of analyse what they're doing there and how this is perhaps good in the ecosystem, because your students are going to be exposed to people who don't want to be advanced and teach the old way, and then you've got people who will teach the new way. So overall, your students are going to be, if this is a healthy system rather than in exposed to one group, they'll eventually be exposed to two, and that's sort of a more natural approach than some sort of hierarchical approach looking at there. But they do say these negative things, and one has to say, in your head, do you just dismiss it? Have a negative view about, you get a negative view, you have a negative view about them, just leave it? Or do you actually think deeply and see if you can actually crack the problem or come up with sort of an intelligent way to go? Like, if what they're doing is not the best, and they don't want to go this way, is there another way to go? And the other way to go is whether you can make your humble school thermometer out of material which was intrinsically more robust and wouldn't break ever. You wouldn't have to actually possibly, even put it back in a protective case. You might be able to really reduce it, and you could make it an injection molding such you just couldn't believe how good it is. So that has led me to look at Capon, and Capon looked at ABS. Looked at Teflon, and Teflon, which is beautiful non-stick surface, and Teflon look at something the opposite of what's nothing sticks to Teflon. You do have a material with everything sticks to it repeatedly, this magic tape. And I think the message is that these things have been around for 50 years. It's just that people are used to seeing their technology announced. It's on the evening news in the United States and eventually coming out to us. Well, thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.